Each month, the Security Ledger podcast informs and entertains an audience of thousands of technology and information security professionals. If that sounds like an audience your company is trying to reach, consider sponsoring one of our podcasts. We offer per-episode sponsorships of our weekly podcasts, which feature news, analysis, and discussion of the most important cybersecurity topics of the day. Or you can commission a custom podcast to highlight your executives, researchers, and subject matter experts. To learn more, point your web browser to securityledger.com/sponsor. Hello, this is the Security Ledger podcast, and I'm your host, Paul Roberts, editor-in-chief at the Security Ledger, in this encore episode of the podcast.
What is the environment that companies create for women and for girls when they become women and they join the workforce?
Right.
What is the environment that they see around them? Do they see women in positions of leadership? Are they reporting to a woman?
Pandemic has been hard on everyone, but it's been especially hard in the last year on working women. Women accounted for 55% of the more than 20 million jobs lost in April 2020, just at the start of the pandemic, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. That raised the unemployment rate for adult women to about 15% post-pandemic, compared to just 3.1% in February before the onset of the disease. What some people refer to not as a recession so much as a she-session. But in the information security space, the she-session began long before COVID-19 was even a thing. The industry has long struggled to find and retain qualified women in information security jobs. There are many possible explanations for that, but many point to an inhospitable, male-dominated culture in information security and, practically, a lack of support for female InfoSec professionals in their jobs. In recognition of Women's History Month this month, Security Ledger is running an encore edition of the podcast focused on just this issue. In this conversation, which was recorded at the RSA conference in San Francisco back in 2019, I speak with Sam King, the chief executive officer of the security firm Veracode, about the information security industry's leaky talent pipeline. King said that promising information security professionals who are women are more prone to simply drop out of the field because they lack the support of their employer to juggle family and work obligations that are different from those of their male colleagues. In this conversation with Sam King, which originally aired in Security Ledger podcast episode number 148, I talk with Sam about her journey to the front office and how empathy may be the secret ingredient in keeping women in the information security workforce. Okay, everybody, welcome back to Veracode Live. I'm Paul Roberts. I'm the editor-in-chief at the Security Ledger, and we're doing a great series of interviews today here in the Veracode booth. And I've got one of the highlights of our agenda all day, Sam King, who's the CEO of Veracode. Sam, welcome to Veracode Live.
Thank you, and thank you for doing all these great interviews for us. I appreciate it.
You're kind of the person to talk to, CEO of Veracode. So one of the things you and Chris are going to talk about this afternoon is this idea of security not as a cost center, which is kind of historically how it's been thought about. Like, you know, security is just what you have to do to, you know, either make your regulator happy or your customers, you know, not angry at you. But really looking at it as security as a, not a feature, but as an enhancer both of sales value and also customer relationships, kind of trust with your customer. Just talk about that. And I guess, how do you make that mental shift happen within companies that might not be used to thinking about it that way?
Yeah, I think what's changed for me in the last couple of years is that this talk track around security being a competitive advantage has existed for quite some time in the industry, frankly, right? Mm-hmm. This is not the first year that you find people saying. What's different for me is that what we were talking about earlier, right? If what people are using to compete in today's modern world is software, and the source of their competition, right, the vehicle that they use to compete has vulnerabilities in it, they're not going to be as competitive, right? So the fact that software is what's providing them competitive edge means that that software better be secure. Otherwise, that competitive edge can turn into a liability.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's that connection between how software is being used and the consequences of that software not being secure is what bringing this topic of security as a competitive advantage back to the table.
And you talk a lot about building trust with the customer.
Absolutely, right? One of the things that we will talk about this afternoon is this concept of champions, building champions inside the organization, security champions that understand development, development champions that understand security, and the underlying principle behind creating these champions is an issue of trust, right? I attended a great talk by this Harvard professor, Francis Fry, who talks about three different things that have to be in place for a leader to have trust. It's authenticity, it's logic, and it's empathy. Now, I think that as an industry,
and Twitter,
all those things showing up on Twitter, right? But I mean, logic, security people, developers are very analytical, they're very logical, so I think we got that covered, right? Authenticity, you know, notwithstanding some embellished claims happening at RSA, I think we're pretty generally honest people in security and development. We want to do the right thing. We want to say the right thing. I think the wobble and the area to go focus on is empathy, right? Security people want to get security done, but the developers also need to get that product out because, yes, by the way, if that product, in our case, software that developers are producing, is holding up revenue, do you really want to be the one that's holding up revenue when in business there are two problems that any CEO has, revenue and all the other problems, right?
Right.
Having that sense of empathy for the development team is important. Now, as a developer, you need to have a sense of empathy for the security person because if the auditors show up and they find that your practices are really divergent from what they require you to do or even what the industry best practices are, and
right,
they come in and they impose a whole bunch of corrective measures or fines or whatever, well, that's going to hold you back too, right? So it's about mutual understanding. It's about empathy.
Sure. Well, and from the developer's perspective, too, you can get this dynamic where you're calling their baby ugly, right? You're giving code that they develop back to them, telling them to fix it.
A person that I worked with years ago, when we had just started the company, said to me, why do you guys scan and scold? How do you think that goes over, right? Scanning and scolding is not going to win you any friends in development, right?
Right.
So we've certainly changed our thinking on that topic.
Yeah.
Scanning is a means to an end.
Yeah.
What is the end? The end is secure software. So we don't want to scan and scold.
I often say, like, you know, in security, we kind of eat our own, you know? Like, there can be a lot of blaming, and there can be a lot of, like, oh, well, that bad thing happened because you failed to do X, Y, and Z that were, you know, best practice or, you know, table stakes security-wise. Pointing the finger of blame and saying, you know, you got what you deserve, that's not a constructive reaction either. That's not going to get you the response that you want either, right? I guess empathy is the missing piece. It kind of brings me to my next question, which is we're here at RSA. This industry and the makeup of this industry is changing. You sitting there as a female executive of an information security company, that's something that until recently you didn't see much of. Talk a little bit about, because you've been coming to RSA for a while, about how you're seeing the industry change and maybe how that is reflected just within Veracode.
Yeah. So first of all, this is an area that I'm very proud of with respect to Veracode. We have more than 30% women in our employee base, which is not as many as there should be, but greater than there is in a lot of different companies, especially a lot of cybersecurity companies. And more importantly than that, we have more than 30% minorities represented in our leadership team, which is, I think, an even greater achievement. So very proud of that. And in general, we have really promoted the concept of diversity and inclusion in all its form, not just diversity of gender or diversity of background, but diversity of thought. When we're trying to problem solve any particular topic, I want multiple viewpoints involved in there, right? Because singular thinking generally doesn't produce the best solutions. So in general, I think diversity is a topic that we've taken very seriously and very pleased with where we are with respect to Veracode. I'm glad you asked me this question because I think it is still a relevant question that needs to be asked of our industry, that needs to be asked in technology. But I will tell you, I was being interviewed by a reporter 2 weeks ago, and for the first time, they didn't ask me, what does it feel like to be a woman in technology? And at the end of the interview, I sat back and I actually kind of went, that's awesome. Maybe it's becoming more mainstream. Maybe that's why nobody needs to ask me what it feels like to be a woman in technology, right? And I thought, okay, that's a sign of some progress.
Right.
But here's how I see it. One of the things that you hear everybody talk about in cybersecurity is the shortage of talent, right? It's like, we have more openings than we know what to do with. We can't find people to fill these. What a great opportunity to take that problem and correlate that with this other issue of there not being adequate representation from all different walks of life in this industry, and commingle those two things together, right, and find ways to draw people from other sectors and other fields, including women and people of color and so on and so forth.
Sure.
I had a meeting yesterday with a woman leader in a state organization, a very complex state organization. She has recently come to the field of cybersecurity. And I looked up her background before the meeting. Her background was in public relations and communications, and she has been fabulously successful,
yeah,
getting all this very complex state organization to start marching towards a common goal with respect to security.
Right.
So, you know, you don't need to have a technical background.
Right.
You don't need to be a man. You can be a woman and be successful, right? You,
right.
Diversity in many different ways can come in and move this problem forward.
So where does that break down? I guess I totally agree with you. Why is the pipeline problem so persistent? I mean, I've been writing about cyber for 15, 16 years, and it's always been there in one form or another. It's very acute now, but it's always been there.
You know, I have wondered if it is a pipeline problem or if it is a leakage problem. And here's what I mean by that, right? I mean, I think if you tell me, do you know if the Grace Hopper Conference?
Yes.
Okay. So it's a conference that occurs every year. I didn't go to it last year. I went to it 2 years ago. There were 18,000
wow,
women and girls from schools and colleges that were attending a technology conference for women. So don't tell me it's a pipeline problem.
Yeah.
Okay. 18,000 women attended.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens next? Right? That's the question that I'm fixated on. What is the environment that companies create for women and for girls when they become women and they join the workforce?
Right.
What is the environment that they see around them? Do they see women in positions of leadership? Are they reporting to a woman?
Yep.
When I had my second child, I was still at Veracode. I chose to go part-time. I chose to work 4 days a week. Now, it's another issue that I ended up working the fifth day and the weekend to make up for the day that I wasn't saying I was working. But, you know, putting that aside, my company worked with me to allow me to go to a schedule that allowed me to continue to contribute, stay part of the workforce,
right,
but also tend to the greater needs on my family's
right,
part, right?
Right.
And now I'm the CEO of Veracode. So
right,
I don't think it held me back to go to part-time for a year. I came back to be a full-time employee and then continued my career. So
right,
so I think, I really don't think it's a pipeline issue. I really don't think it's an ambition issue. I think it is a support issue, because at different points in time, as people climb through their career ladder, are we creating the right environment for them to stay, for them to make that choice to go to the next level?
Yes.
Or are we causing leakage to occur there?
Yes. So you just described a much more complicated problem than a pipeline problem.
You know what?
That's like a structural problem.
I think if you simplify the problem too much, you sometimes don't end up solving it. So
yeah,
let's really talk
I
about
totally
the problem
I think you're right,
in the way that it exists, and then maybe we'll make progress against
right,
it.
Right. You gotta look at it in the face and see it for what it is. I totally agree with you. I think you're right. It's a lot of things, right?
It's a lot of different.
Yeah.
It's a lot
yeah,
of different things. And by the way, you have to have allies in this, right?
Right.
There are a lot of men that are, my mentors have been men, have been women, but also have been men that have
right,
said to me, you can go do this, right?
Right.
So it takes all of us working together.
So you're here at RSA. What do you, you're speaking, you're presenting,
that's
and I'm sure
right,
you're doing a ton of meetings, but if you're going to go to any sessions, what sessions are you going to check out? What are you interested in seeing?
So unfortunately, I don't really get to go to too many sessions because my team has me speaking with all customers all day long, which is great, which is absolutely great. But if I could get to a session, I'd love to go to Tina Fey's session. I love her.
I know.
I absolutely love her. I want to see what she has to say, and what does she have to say on the topic of security? I mean, listen, If you need to apply humor to anything in the world, security is probably it, right? It's a hard problem. It's a hard problem. So I would love to go see Tina Fey talk.
I would also. Maybe we should delay our flights and go.
Maybe we should do that. Maybe we should do that.
Sam Ying, thank you so much.
It was great to talk to you.
Sam King is the CEO of the firm Veracode. This interview was recorded in 2019 on the floor of the RSA Security Conference in San Francisco.